Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. A new children's book brings to light the experiences of migrant children detained at the southern border during the Trump administration. The children tell their stories in their own words in Hear My Voice, Escucha Mi Voz. Warren Binford compiled testimonies from 61 children from publicly available court documents. Binford is the lead organizer and co-founder of Project Amplify, a national campaign that aims to establish legal protection for detained children and families. Binford is an international children's rights scholar and advocate who visited facilities where migrant children and families were detained during the Trump administration. We spoke to Binford last week about the conditions she witnessed at these facilities. Migrant children are again being encountered at the border by the thousands. They either crossed alone or were separated from an adult who wasn't their parent or guardian. Binford returns to Fronteras this week to talk about some of the differences between how migrant children were treated under the Trump administration compared to the current administration.
So, unfortunately, there is an embargo for the visits again now because we want to get those stories into the courts again. But what I can tell you as far as the differences is that what there's not an embargo on is the fact that the current administration is trying to engage with a number of children's rights experts and immigration experts from around the country and try and figure out how to get this right, that the crisis that we've witnessed on the border over the last few years is not a crisis of numbers. If you look historically in modern history at the apprehension of undocumented people in migration arriving to the United States, we saw 1.8 million people in 1985. We saw 1.8 million people being apprehended in the year 2000. Over the last few years, we're seeing a few hundred thousand people. You know, we are seeing a fraction of that, you know, at most a third in the highest years. But what has changed is the number of children and families arriving to the U.S. border. And that's what created the so-called crisis, that we have not adapted the system of processing to meet the needs of children and families, as opposed to other adult men who historically have been the majority of the people arriving in the United States without documentation. And so the Biden administration appears to be engaging with us, trying to focus on making the processing of the children happen much more quickly, keeping the kids out of Border Patrol custody or care, which the Border Patrol itself says, we can't care for these children. We don't have the facilities to care for them. We don't have the training to care for them. So it needs to be really more focused on reception, identification, and then reunification, because 89% of these children historically have parents, family, other loved ones in the United States. They don't need to be in government care. So really all we need the government to do is when the children arrive to receive them, identify them as who they are, identify where their family or loved ones are in the United States, and then get them there safely, and then make sure that they are plugged into the legal processes so that their claims for remaining in the United States can be heard. If the children don't have family, loved ones, or a legal basis for being here, still treating them humanely, but reunifying them with their families or other loved ones back in their home country. But either way, regardless of whether the children have a right to stay in the United States or need to be returned to their home country, we need to make sure that the entire time that they're in government care, they're being treated humanely, and that the ultimate goal is to get them to their family and loved ones as quickly as possible. And that's what we're seeing from the current administration that we were not seeing with the previous administration, is trying to get the system right so that this crisis ends once and for all.
So going back to the book, Hear My Voice, Escucha Mi Voz, we say that it is a children's book, but there are some kind of serious matters that might concern some parents. About what age range would you consider would be appropriate for this book?
So I think it really depends on the child. And I would say that generally, the book is geared towards children who are approximately 8 and older. There are some younger children who have a supportive family who can talk about these issues with them and explain what's going on and walk them through what they're learning from the book. There are also some children who might have special needs or heightened sensitivities who might not be appropriate for this book until they're a little bit older. But generally speaking, this book is appropriate for children 8 and older, and it's very appropriate as well for teenagers, youth, adults, that because it's a children's book, it's not just for children. We called it a children's book both because it was written by children and because children could read it. But this is a book that you could send to your member of Congress. You can send this to the Department of Homeland Security. You can send this to Mar-a-Lago. You can send it to the White House. You can send it to your friends and family members so that they can read the children's accounts in their own words. And it's a very effective book, both for educating children about what's happening at the border and who these children are, why they're coming to the United States, and what their experiences are once they get here, so that they understand why so many adults are concerned about the need to change the processing of children at the border. But it's also appropriate for adults who would like to share these children's stories with other adults. And like I say, it makes their stories much more accessible because of the way that we've created the mosaic and because of the beautiful illustrations that were done by the Latinx illustrators who came forward to bring life to the children's stories.
And the book is available when, and proceeds benefit who?
So the book is available April 13th. 100% of the royalties will go to Project Amplify, which is the project that gave life to this book, which is trying to center the immigration reform on children and their experiences and try and make sure that people hear their voices, hear their stories, so that they stop being politicized. And Project Amplify is a volunteer organization, and so the proceeds are going entirely to the efforts to bring the children's accounts themselves into the public consciousness and making sure that the public knows what's happening to these children.
Warren Binford is a professor of law and professor of pediatrics at the University of Colorado. She's an international children's rights scholar and advocate, and is the lead organizer and co-founder of Project Amplify, a national campaign that aims to establish legal protection for detained children and families. Binford compiled the court testimonies of detained children into the book, Hear My Voice, Escucha Mi Voz. It's available April 13th. Hear part one of my conversation with Warren Binford at tpr.org. When we come back, why was Health and Human Services underprepared for caring for migrant children at the border this year?
They don't know how many children are going to be arriving this month or next month or later in the year.
That's next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The coronavirus pandemic led to the immediate expulsion of thousands of migrant adults, families, and children under a CDC public health order known as Title 42. President Biden amended Title 42 in January to exempt unaccompanied children. Since then, thousands of migrant children have been encountered at the southern border. These children are considered unaccompanied because they either crossed alone or were separated from an adult who was not their parent or guardian. What happens to these children once they've crossed? First of all, unaccompanied children from Mexico are returned to Mexico. The law distinguishes children from contiguous countries like the U.S. and Canada from children from elsewhere. They are returned if they are determined not to be human trafficking victims or if there's no fear of being returned to their home country. All remaining unaccompanied children are referred to the Office of Refugee Resettlement under the Department of Health and Human Services. ORR shelters are at capacity. They do not have enough beds to accommodate all the children sent to them from Customs and Border Protection holding facilities. Mark Greenberg is a senior fellow with the Migration Policy Institute. He recently wrote an article for the organization that shines light on the reasons behind the lack of bed space at ORR shelters. Greenberg says the Biden administration took office with less than half the shelter capacity that ORR estimated was needed for preparedness. Greenberg says there's a big difference in conditions at CBP facilities and ORR shelters.
When children are apprehended by Customs and Border Protection, they will stay in a CBP holding facility until they can go to ORR. And the law says that they should be there for not longer than 72 hours, absent exceptional circumstances. And the facilities themselves are really just holding facilities. They may be smaller or bigger, but they are essentially just places where children are waiting until they can get to ORR. So they are having very basic needs met, but it is not a place where there are social services or really anything to do other than go through their screening and interviews and wait until they can get released to ORR. So while the law says 72 hours, I think it's broadly recognized that even 72 hours is a long time. If possible, it would be best if children could get out of the CBP facilities within less than a day, and ideally even shorter than that, as quickly as they could, because they're just not appropriate places for children. That was true before the pandemic, and then it's really true during the pandemic, wherein these are very overcrowded facilities. Sitting there waiting to be able to leave is an environment which is potentially greatly increasing the risk of COVID exposure. So it's just not good for children. There's a big contrast with the ordinary, the usual ORR shelter facilities. These are typically run by nonprofit organizations. When children arrive there, they will get a medical exam. They'll get any needed vaccinations. There are mental health staff on site, case managers on site, education, opportunities for recreation. There are Know Your Rights presentations for legal services, access to religious observance, a set of services which are available to the children while there are efforts made to determine if they have a parent or sponsor they can be released to.
Well, in an ideal world, there would be enough beds for all the migrant children, but we have seen so many thousands and thousands being encountered at the southern border. And you point out in your article that the beds, the state-licensed beds from ORR, there are not enough to handle these large amounts of children. And you explain why in that article you wrote for Migration Policy Institute. Could you explain what you found?
The way that things usually work, or normally work, is that ORR makes arrangements to have shelter space available for arriving children. And normally these are shelters that both meet ORR requirements and also meet requirements for state licensing and state monitoring. And ORR tries to make arrangements so that they will have enough shelter beds for arriving children. The challenge they will face is that they don't know how many children are going to be arriving this month or next month or later in the year. So they try to do planning for what they think is going to be enough beds. And the particular thing that has happened over the last year is they had built up a number of beds, 13,000 beds, in their shelter system. Then when COVID hit, a large number of those beds had to go offline. And they went offline because of a combination of state and local COVID-related requirements and federal guidelines and needs for social distancing and needs to be able to quarantine and sometimes isolate children and staff absences. So there were a whole set of reasons why the beds went offline, but the bottom line is that they did. And that then meant this spring, when the numbers of arriving children went up, there just weren't enough beds for the numbers of arriving children.
Well, we are now seeing a lot of these emergency influx facilities begin to open up to accommodate for the children that cannot be accommodated by ORR in the current facilities. You're hearing about them opening up here in San Antonio, in Midland. What kind of oversight do those facilities get? Do they fall under HHS oversight? Is the federal government overseeing them? Are state governments? How are those regulated?
What has happened over the last couple of months is that ORR normally tries, when they don't have enough beds, to operate what are called influx facilities. They are in many respects comparable, or they try to be comparable, to their regular shelters, although they are typically much larger and they're not subject to state licensing and monitoring, though ORR tries to make them as comparable as it can. And that's what they turn to first in the current situation, and that's what the one in Carrizo Springs is. What's happened since that time is that because the number of children arriving each day continues to be much bigger than the number of children being released, it means that they keep needing to add more and more capacity. And they have now turned to what they're referring to as emergency intake sites, which are the ones in San Antonio and Dallas and Houston and Midland and San Diego and possibly other locations. And these are really not like the regular shelters. These are instead most typically a convention hall or a large facility where it's possible to set up cots for hundreds or more children to be in the facility. They don't have all the services that a normal shelter would have. And I think what has happened is that the government has turned to these because the overcrowding at Customs and Border Protection was so bad that they looked to see what can be done to move children into a setting that is better than Customs and Border Protection, even if it's not a good setting.
These children that find themselves in these outside emergency intake centers, typically you want them to connect with their sponsor or a family member in the United States. Having them spread out at all these different facilities, how is the process of tracking down a family member or sponsor made more difficult by this placement of children at these various facilities?
The process of getting a child released to a parent or other sponsor involves a number of steps. It involves talking with the child about whether there is someone in this country who might be able to be a potential sponsor and what's the nature of their relationship and is this someone that they would want to live with and go to. It then involves reaching out to that potential sponsor and finding out, are they interested in being a sponsor and who are they? You know, if they say they're the child's parent or grandparent or aunt or uncle, can you confirm that that really is the case? And if they are interested in taking on sponsorship, there's what's referred to as a vetting process of determining, does the person have a criminal history? But overall, the goal of the process is to determine if it's safe and appropriate to release this child to the person who is the potential sponsor. And that's a process that involves making a set of judgments, because on the one hand, there's a goal of wanting to get children out of federal custody into a sponsor as quickly as is safe. But at the same time, the government doesn't want to make mistakes to the greatest extent possible and doesn't want to put children in situations that are potentially risky for them.
Well, it seems like speed is sort of the factor here in trying to relieve some of these problems with trying to find space to hold all these children. But as you said, the government really can't be rushed at this point or risk making mistakes like were done a few years ago when children were separated from their families and some of them have never been reunited. So what solutions do you propose? I mean, you have experience with Health and Human Services. You worked with that department for a few years. What recommendations do you think you would make if you could make them in order to help resolve these issues?
There are short-run parts of this and longer-run parts. I mean, in the short run, the things that the Health and Human Services agency needs to be doing is expanding capacity, putting in place needed services at the sites they're expanding to, and figuring out what are the ways to speed the process of releasing children that minimize risks of something going wrong and putting children at risk. But in the long run, there are important parts of this that go way beyond HHS. One part is the work around addressing the conditions in countries of origin. The children are principally coming from the Central American countries of Guatemala and Honduras and El Salvador. And there is a recognition that they are often fleeing from terrible violence or desperate economic conditions, and that for many of the children, that is a principal reason for making the journey. So for the government, work with those countries of origins around addressing these underlying conditions is a key part of a long-run strategy. And another key part of a long-run strategy is rebuilding the immigration system in this country, where in recent years, there were very significant cutbacks in the conditions under which people could qualify for asylum, and the backlogs in the immigration courts got enormous. And for people arriving, whether children or members of families or single people, there is a need to have a fair system that considers their asylum claims and considers them in a prompt way that doesn't take years and years. So those are long-run things that need to happen. But in the short run, the immediate issue is really ensuring that there is shelter capacity, needed services, and that children can get to parents or sponsors as quickly as is safe.
Well, Mark Greenberg with Migration Policy Institute, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Mark Greenberg is a senior fellow with the Migration Policy Institute. He recently wrote an article for MPI titled Hampered by the Pandemic. Find a link to it at tpr.org. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show online at tpr.org and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Bree Kirkham. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.